Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Happy New Year to all of our listeners. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in San Diego's East County. Today we'll open our show with some top New Year's stories from across the nation, around the world, here in California and San Diego County. And then on our Capitol Report, hear about the first actions of the new Congress in Washington, which includes efforts to gut oversight of ethics in Congress and forbid your representatives from staging protests on the House floor. On Green Scene, learn about delays and closures planned in McCain Valley out here in East County as construction of the controversial Tule Wind Project begins. In El Cajon, a teenage couple seriously injured in a car crash on Christmas Eve remains hospitalized and unable to work. Their family is asking for public help with donations to cover medical expenses, especially since the couple is expecting a baby, and we'll have details. Our newsmaker interview today is with Diane Conklin from the Mussy Grade Road Alliance in Ramona, a watchdog group that's speaking out on issues impacting wildfire survivors and utility ratepayers. She's urging the public to show up and speak out Monday when the California Public Utilities Commission will hold two hearings in Escondido at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock on a new proposal by SDG&E to charge ratepayers for the remaining liability costs from the 2007 wildfires. Hear arguments for and against SDG&E's proposal on today's show. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about some fascinating festivals and events coming up across our region, from a family fun fest at Croc Center on Saturday to a powwow at Cuyamaca College, from an artist reception at the Weed Course Museum in El Cajon to cabaret nights at the Young Adult Theater in Spring Valley, and many more events right here in East County. On Crime Beat, learn about another officer-involved shooting in El Cajon. Plus, hear about a hit-and-run driver sought for killing a pedestrian on New Year's weekend and fleeing the scene of the accident on Highway 94 in Spring Valley. Then we'll have news about a deadly fire in Lakeside, followed by some good news for the Tirnanog Horse Rescue Center in Guate. On our weather report, hear about yet more storms sweeping into our region and how that could affect your weekend plans. On Jobs Talk, get details on California's new minimum wage that's just taken effect, including which businesses will and won't be impacted. Then on sports, hear the outcome of what may be the Chargers' last game in San Diego as our hometown team. We'll also have information today on the Laguna Mountain Volunteers, an organization that is seeking help for its many worthwhile activities on Mount Laguna. We'll have all of these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Around the world and across the nation, people celebrated the end of tumultuous 2016 and the arrival of a new year. Here are some highlights of newsworthy New Year's happenings worldwide, nationwide, and right here in San Diego County. President-elect Donald Trump held his annual New Year's bash at his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida, where he said his New Year's resolution is, no surprise here, to make America great again. Earlier in the day, Trump tweeted a provocative New Year's message saying he wished everyone, even his, quote, many enemies, unquote, a happy New Year. In Times Square, singer Mariah Carey, wearing a sparkling nude bodysuit, suffered a lip-syncing meltdown when a recording malfunctioned amid New Year's Eve revelry. Fireworks lit up the skies as major cities around the world rang in the New Year from London, England to Sydney, Australia. But the New Year started on a somber note in Istanbul, Turkey, where a terrorist attack by a gunman at a nightclub killed dozens of revelers an hour after midnight. In California, pranksters altered the famous Hollywood sign to read Hollyweed, a reference to the newly legalized recreational marijuana here. On December 31st, actor William Christopher, best known for his role as Father Mulcahy on the TV show MASH, became the last of many beloved celebrities to pass on in 2016. Now in Southern California, there's good news for skiers. A winter storm dropped nearly a foot of snow at Big Bear, By New Year's Day, 2 inches of snow had fallen on Palomar Mountain and on Mount Laguna here in East County. The storm also poured 3 inches of rain on Pine Hills near Julian and 2 inches in many other mountain towns, bringing much-needed drought relief. In San Diego, a pair of twins gave their parents a New Year's surprise, born in separate years shortly before and after midnight. Mara Elliott, San Diego's new city attorney, says her resolution is to help foster a meaningful regional approach to homelessness, including the county and local cities in that effort. She adds, "Together, we must act on our humanity, united as one region." On New Year's Day, two prominent San Diego politicians posted a wedding announcement on Twitter and Facebook. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, former head of the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, married former Assemblyman and ex-mayoral candidate Nathan Fletcher in Balboa Park. The happy couple then celebrated at a reception with 200 friends, invited to what they thought would be a surprise birthday party for Fletcher. But instead, it was the guests who were surprised by the joyful New Year's news. And capping off New Year's weekend, the Chargers lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in a bittersweet end for fans at Qualcomm Stadium, where this may have been the Chargers' last game ever as San Diego's hometown team. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. The first action of the 115th Congress was a closed-door vote by House Republicans to gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, or OCE, of its independence and oversight powers. But hours later, after media reported on the action and members received a flood of calls from angry constituents, a new vote was held to scrap that plan and keep the OCE intact, for now. The Office of Congressional Ethics was created in 2008 by then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi in response to the corruption scandal involving lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who was later convicted of multiple felonies. The House Ethics Committee back then was viewed as inadequate to investigate congressional corruption, so the OCE was created to provide independence to conduct investigations, including probes based on tips from staffers, the public, and anonymous sources. Since then, the OCE has conducted over 100 congressional ethics investigations, passing about a third of those along to the House Ethics Committee. Most recently, the OCE investigations have included a probe into San Diego Congressman Duncan Hunter's campaign expenditures after media reports revealed large outlays for expensive jewelry, a family vacation, video games, and payments to his children's private school. Hunter recently announced he had repaid $49,000 to his campaign. House Republicans on Monday night voted to eliminate key OCE powers and give the House Ethics Committee oversight of the OCE's actions, eliminating its independence. The measure would have prohibited OCE from accepting anonymous tips from citizens or from congressional staff and other whistleblowers. The amendment would also have forced the OCE to get permission from the House Ethics Committee before releasing any information to the public, and given the House Ethics Committee the right to order the OCE to stop investigating any potential violations. The OCE would also have been banned from having a press or communications staffer. That dubious start to the new session drew strong criticism from congressional watchdogs on both sides of the political aisle. Nancy Pelosi, now House Minority Leader, blasted the move, stating, "Evidently, ethics are the first casualty of the new Republican Congress." She called the OCE essential to an effective ethics process in the House, providing a vital element of transparency and accountability to the ethics process. Judicial Watch, a right-wing conservative group most often critical of Democrats, also skewered the action as a shameful move to destroy the Office of Congressional Ethics. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton tweeted, "Poor way to begin draining the swamp. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, which has filed ethical complaints recently against San Diego Representative Daryl Issa, has a record of investigating congressional members' ethical actions by both Republicans and Democrats. Cruise Chairman Norman Eisen served as ethics lawyer for President Barack Obama, and Cruise Vice Chair Richard Painter served in that same role for President George W. Bush. In a joint statement, the pair said the House amendment would create a serious risk to the American people who expect representatives to meet legal and ethical obligations and who rely on the OCE to provide fair, nonpartisan investigations. Even President-elect Donald Trump chided House leaders for the action, stating in a pair of tweets, "With all that Congress has to work on, do they really have to make the weakening of the independent ethics watchdog, as unfair as it may be, their number one act and priority? Focus on tax reform, health care, and so many other things of far greater importance." He added the hashtag DTS, meaning drain the swamp. The amendment's author, Virginia Representative Bob Goodlatte, defended his amendment, claiming the OCE needs oversight by Congress and contending that some members had complained about due process if a complaint was made public without a finding of wrongdoing. But the American public came clearly down on the side of oversight, not weakening ethics investigators' abilities, and a public backlash swiftly followed the closed-door vote. Google searches for "Who is my representative?" spiked after the vote to gut ethics, with House Republican members' offices soon swamped by calls and emails from outraged constituents. House Speaker Paul Ryan reportedly urged that the action be put on ice. Within hours, a new vote by House Republicans did just that. The move shows that despite Republicans now having control of both houses of Congress and the presidency, the will of the people still matters. Some House insiders warn that efforts to weaken the Office of Congressional Ethics will likely resurface in the future. But for now, whistleblowers, the public, and congressional staffers are free to bring complaints to the OCE, which remains empowered to conduct bipartisan investigations, independent of oversight by the partisan House Ethics Committee.
This is Gene Carpenter with an update from our nation's capital. The new Republican-led House of Representatives has passed a resolution to impose fines on members who stage protests on the House floor. The action aims to crack down on actions such as last year's sit-in staged by House Democrats after Republicans ordered cameras turned off to prevent C-SPAN from broadcasting a debate over a gun control measure by California Senator Dianne Feinstein. San Diego Democrat Scott Peters live-streamed video of the sit-in in protest and a filibuster from his cell phone and posted it on social media, drawing national attention to the issues. Republican leaders contend the resolution banning such actions in the future is needed to restore decorum, according to the Rules Committee Chairman Pete Sessions, a Texas Republican. A House member can now be fined $500 for breaking rules of debate, with $2,500 for each additional offense. Critics say sit-ins and other nonviolent forms of protest are cherished means of free speech that have been effective in bringing about change, such as during the Civil Rights Movement. Democratic Congressman John Lewis from Georgia, a longtime civil rights activist who led the congressional sit-in, had this reaction to House Republicans' crackdown on protests by House members. "No Congress, nobody, no committee has the power to tell us that we cannot stand up, and speak truth to power." Representative Lewis declared on the House floor, "We have a right to dissent." He concluded, "We cannot and will not be silent."
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Construction of the controversial Tule Wind Energy Project in McCain Valley begins in early January, starting with widening of McCain Valley Road. Upon completion, the project will include 62 wind turbines on over 12,000 acres of federal and state public lands, including a national recreational area. A public notice has been issued cautioning users of McCain Valley Road, Lake Canyon Campground, Cottonwood Campground, and the off-highway vehicle area about temporary closures and traffic delays. During January, the construction will commence Mondays through Saturdays from 7 in the morning until 5 in the evening. McCain Valley Road will remain open through construction, but visitors may encounter slow-moving construction vehicles and short road delays at times. Drivers are asked to use caution and please watch for workers on the roadway. If construction work is expected to cause delays longer than 15 minutes on McCain Valley Road, an advisory will be posted at least 48 hours in advance on the public information board at the entrance to McCain Valley Recreation Area and online at TuleWindECCMP.com. Temporary closures of campgrounds and the off-highway vehicle areas will be necessary during construction starting in mid-January and will be posted at least 48 hours in advance. Now, if you have questions, you can call a free hotline at 844-784-6549. The Tule Wind Project has generated strong opposition from area residents, recreational enthusiasts, and environmentalists. Donna Tisdale, who led efforts to halt the project in court, told us, "We have exhausted all of our legal challenges to no avail. Our efforts did manage to reduce the project footprint and number of turbines and to extract limited mitigation funds for some community groups. But," she adds, "no amount of mitigation can make up for the long-term destruction of public lands, wildlife, and other resources or impacted residents." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A young couple from El Cajon was seriously injured in a car accident on Christmas Eve. They were on their way home from a holiday dinner with family when a driver pulled out of a side street in front of them without looking. The impact was so hard that it spun their vehicle around 180 degrees, sending both 17-year-old Sierra Marco and 19-year-old Ruben De Hoyos, Jr. to the trauma center at Sharp Memorial Hospital with major injuries. A GoFundMe site has been set up by Ruben's mother to help Ruben and Sierra, who face months of rehabilitation and are currently both unable to work. Left with no income and staggering medical bills not fully covered by insurance, they need help, especially since Sierra is expecting a baby. Ruben suffered head and facial injuries. His mother, Erica De Hoyos, says her son has over 500 stitches and 17 staples in his head, with more surgeries needed to repair damage to his face. Sierra suffered a collapsed lung and has had 2 chest tubes inserted. She needs 24/7 care and cannot walk or move around without a nursing aide. She has nerve damage in her lower body, but fortunately her unborn baby survived the crash. Ruben works in construction and Sierra has a job in a doctor's office, but both are still hospitalized and will face many months of recovery before they can return to work. Sierra is also a student at San Diego Charter School in Lakeside. Ruben's mother says doctors stated they are lucky to be alive. She calls their ordeal a nightmare, adding on the GoFundMe page, "Please, I am asking you to help this young couple and my unborn grandchild. No matter how big or small, your donation will greatly be appreciated." If you wish to make a donation to help this young couple and their unborn baby, you can visit the Ruben and Sierra Fund page online at GoFundMe.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Fistier.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Diane Conklin with the Mussy Grade Road Alliance, a community group in Ramona that has been outspoken on representing the interests of residents and ratepayers on wildfire issues. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Today, we're going to be talking about a very big issue, a $379 million issue to be exact, that ratepayers could be footing the bill for. Now, what we're talking about is a California Public Utilities Commission hearing that's going to be held in Escondido coming up on Monday at 2 o'clock and again at 7 o'clock. And the issue is they're going to be hearing testimony on whether or not San Diego Gas and Electric Company, or SDG&E, should be allowed to charge ratepayers for their uninsured losses during the 2007 firestorms. So, Diane, give us a little bit of background for some of our younger listeners who might not remember those firestorms.
There were a number of fires in San Diego County, three of which CAL FIRE found SDG&E equipment responsible for.
Can you tell us what they were like?
Yes, the firestorms that came through San Diego, there were three fires, the Witch, Juanjito, and Rice fires, were some of the largest fires that ever have occurred in San Diego. They did not exceed the Cedar Fire of 2003, but they burned over 200,000 acres, killed two people, and burned some 1,300 homes. The fires combined were ignited by SDG&E equipment, and the total cost for all of those three fires was $2 billion.
Yeah. Now, we should clarify that SDG&E never actually admitted guilt to that, but CAL FIRE did conclude that it was SDG&E equipment that caused those three fires. Now, SDG&E has settled a lot of cases individually with some of the fire survivors. There's a couple of cases still in court. They had settlements with the city and I think the county of San Diego. And much of their losses were covered by their insurance, but not all of that. And so it's the uninsured portion that they're looking to charge back. So if they're successful in getting the PUC to say that it's okay for them to charge ratepayers for this $379 million, Diane, have you done any calculations? How much would that work out to per household, on average?
Yes, according to the calculations we've done and according to the number of ratepayers there are in the San Diego Gas and Electric Service Territory, it would be about $280 a household.
That's
the total amount. The bottom line is, though, that it wouldn't just be that. I have been an intervener at the California Public Utilities Commission for 10 years. I started in 2006. Our issue for the Muskie Grade Road Alliance is fire. That my husband, Joseph Mitchell, who is a particle physicist and works in software today, has become an expert at the commission in fire, and we have put in testimony on this particular ask by SDG&E. And what we're concerned about is, even if $280 doesn't sound like a lot, and it is a lot to a lot of people, the main point is that if SDG&E gets $379, almost $400 million from the ratepayers for fires ignited by their equipment, then the doors will be open to SDG&E asking for another round of money for the next fires that may occur. And we are very concerned that this will cause a moral hazard problem. It will mean that SDG&E will be less, not more prudent, and we think it would be a very bad idea for the CPUC to allow this to be paid to SDG&E.
I've heard the argument also that potentially not only SDG&E, but all energy companies would sort of be disincentivized from trying to make things safer and preventing not only fires, but things like gas pipeline explosions or methane leaks like we saw where they had to evacuate the entire town of Porter Ranch in the LA area for months because of that. If they can just charge ratepayers back for something that was arguably caused by negligence or inadequate maintenance, however you want to phrase it, where is their incentive to actually spend money up front to make things safer and not have those kind of catastrophes occur?
Yes, that is a major problem, and we are concerned that SDG&E may come in on Porter Ranch and ask for more money.
The Porter Ranch problem was a Southern California Gas issue, which is a sister company of SDG&E, not SDG&E itself, although both are owned by Sempra.
But the real problem here is that the CPUC has been in some ways captured by the utilities it regulates. You don't have a lobbyist up there every day. We don't.
Right.
We're a small grassroots group. And the influence that the utilities have is immense. However, we defeated them in 2012 because they teamed up with Southern California Edison and Pacific Gas and Electric, all the big three in California, to try to put together a scheme by which they could collect money without any scrutiny or practically any scrutiny, and also to charge for the money for the fires in 2007. And we defeated them along with other people. The city attorney Micah Geary was involved. We had the other consumer groups involved. Yeah. And fundamentally, we won.
I remember that hearing. Supervisor Diane Jacob was there, who will be sending a staffer on Monday to speak out against SDG&E's latest proposal, by the way. And as you say, Micah Geary, former city attorney, many fire victims. It was very emotional. Back then, SDG&E called this the Wildfire Expense Balancing Account, or WEBA. It was the same idea of letting them charge back for the uninsured costs of the fires. And it was very moving. People came in, fire victims, carrying, you know, burned rubble that was all that remained of their house, and talking about family members that had been seriously injured or who died in that fire. And the PUC voted against the SDG&E proposal. So what's different this time? What makes them believe that at this hearing in Escondido next Monday that the result would be any different? Have they changed anything about the proposal? Do they have some new reason why they're suddenly saying they should be told yes when they were told no to the same idea before?
What they have is a lot of lawyers, and they have a lot of money to litigate against the ratepayers. And what they have are shareholders who don't want to pay the cost. So fundamentally, this is 10 years ago that these fires occurred. SDG&E is really hoping that the public, who is really responsible for having the result in 2012, doesn't turn out on Monday at the California Center for the Arts Escondido.
Diane, if people want to come speak out about this, and they want to show up at these two hearings on Monday, January 9th in Escondido, can you tell us exactly where and at what times the hearings will be held?
Yes. The hearings will be held January 9th, that's Monday, at 2 and 7 p.m. in the city of Escondido at the California Center for the Art Escondido. It's a convention center. It's going to be Salon One Room, 340 North Escondido Boulevard. And SDG&E is trying to come back 10 years later after the fires, hoping that people who really won the 2012 decision by turning out in the hundreds against that previous ask of $594 million, that they won't come this time. They are hoping that people have moved on, moved out, don't care. And we're hoping that your listeners will turn up at 2 or 7 p.m. that afternoon to talk to the assigned commissioner from the California Public Utilities Commission and the administrative law judge. These people will be writing the proposed decision and telling them why SDG&E should not get paid for fires it ignited with its equipment.
Okay. And if you want to speak, it's always a good idea to get there early and request a speaker card and make sure there are people from, you know, both sides that are there early and have equal opportunity to present their views. Now, in all fairness, SDG&E is not here today. This was kind of a last-minute interview that was scheduled when Diane called us up and asked for help to get word out on this. But we did speak with Hannah Eisenman, an SDG&E representative, who says that public safety is their priority. SDG&E's view is that the 2007 wildfires were natural disasters that affected everyone. And these included the worst Santa Ana winds the utility has ever seen, hurricane force in some cases. The company did have $5.6 billion in claims at first and says it's worked hard to reduce the impacts to its customers with the various settlements, bringing that down to $375 million, and that it should be able to get the recovery of those costs from the ratepayers. Now, they've also invested in fire hardening, replacing about 7,000 wood poles with steel poles, and each year they're bringing in the giant air crane firefighting helicopter. They've also created the largest utility-owned system of weather stations in the country, with 170 different stations, so that the utility can pre-position firefighting equipment even before the winds kick up. And in addition, they've invested in helping 60 fire stations locally upgrade communications equipment. I've heard them make the argument that if they've never actually admitted fault to this, although CAL FIRE did find them responsible. What would your response be? Why shouldn't they be able to charge back to the ratepayers and have them bear part of the responsibility for this, Diane, in your view?
Well, besides the problem that their equipment ignited the fires, there's also the issue that they are saying now that they wouldn't have known. They did not anticipate the issue of Santa Ana winds and an electrical spark from equipment causing catastrophic fires. But our expert found out that SDG&E weather analyses going back to 1981 showed SDG&E knew. Yes, they knew that they could regularly expect winds gusting more than 56 miles per hour. And that's the standard to which SDG&E has built. Mm. But there's also a question of whether that's the correct standard. The main point is that there's no one in San Diego who doesn't know that we have Santa Ana winds, and that the utility itself must have been or should have been, and according to their own studies, did know that there was this potential for this kind of catastrophic event.
Yeah, actually out in Potrero, the Harris fire that was also part of the 2007 firestorms, that one was not caused by SDG&E equipment, it was caused by something else. But there were 100-mile-an-hour hurricane-force Santa Ana winds out there. So a 56-mile-an-hour standard does seem low when we know that this area has a potential, not only in Ramona but region-wide, to get these very high winds. And it only takes once, as we've all seen, to have a catastrophe where suddenly you've got 500,000 people evacuating region-wide.
Yes, it was a very expensive fire, and SDG&E only had $1 billion in insurance. So, and they collected some money from Cox, because Cox Cable was involved as well in the Guajito fire. But the main point for us regarding the CPUC hearing now is that SDG&E needs to know that the people of San Diego, their ratepayers, who are subject to a monopoly utility, have no way else to get their electricity unless they can afford solar. And solar is a big investment, costs a lot of money.
Right.
People can do it over years, but still, the majority of people are getting their juice from SDG&E. And that utility, it has to be responsible to the citizens and the ratepayers that it serves.
Yeah, we're already paying among the highest utility rates in the entire nation. I think that's worth noting here. To SDG&E's credit, what we have seen since those fires is they have made significant investment in trying to make their lines more fire resistant. We've seen them changing out a lot of wood poles to metal poles, as we mentioned, installing weather stations and monitoring equipment, really a state-of-the-art thing for the whole country, so that in the future they'll be able to know more quickly if conditions are conducive for fires, and so that they can find fires faster. They have their own firefighting helicopter and equipment. So we have seen them make some investment. I just wonder, would they have done that if they'd known ahead of time that, you know, hey, if there's a problem, we can just charge it back to the ratepayers? And I wonder about other utilities around the state or other energy companies. You know, look at Ocotillo, where they've had 3 wind turbines that either burst into flames, fell over, threw a blade off. How much incentive would there be for a company like the one that built that project to, to worry about the liability if someone gets hurt, if they can just charge costs of negligent action or poorly maintained equipment back to the ratepayers?
Yeah, that's a very important point, because fundamentally, investors are countrywide. And so they watch the markets. The market was watching what was going on with the 2007 fires, believe you me, right after it. And the chairman and the CEO at that point was Donald Felsinger, and of Sempra Energy, which owns SDG&E and SoCal Gas. The suburban enclave he lived in, the trails off of, at that time, off of Rancho Bernardo Road, actually had houses burned down there.
Okay.
So here's your utility burning down your neighbors. But the point is that we applaud SDG&E for the prudence that they have shown in the aftermath of the fires. They have a program called FIRM. It costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that is the program where they're strengthening transmission. And they're also, by doing that, they're also having the poles be more resilient. They're also getting into distribution lines and fixing those. And I remember we went out with one of the commissioners in the past from the CPUC and looked out over from Santa Isabel. And he looked at the scene. He's no longer with the commission, but he looked out at the scene and he said, there's a lot of poles out there. Well, exactly right. San Diego County is one of the biggest counties in the United States. We go from the ocean to the desert. We go through intercoastal mountain ranges. And fundamentally, this is a very sophisticated market, but it's also a very rugged market. And it's really important that we be safe. And if we pay the utility, the monopoly utility, for their mistakes in the sense that their equipment ignited these fires, you know, but for the equipment, we wouldn't have had the fires, then we're teaching the market, not just here, but throughout the state of California, and then throughout the country, that, hey, the utilities, monopoly utilities in areas where there's no munis, there's no municipally owned companies, monopoly utilities can stick it to the ratepayer. If it happens in California, it's bound to happen other places. So we don't want that to happen nationwide either.
Okay. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking today with Diane Conklin with the Mussy Grade Road Alliance, which represents fire survivors in the Ramona area. And we've been talking about hearings coming up on Monday that the California Public Utilities Commission will be holding locally, considering SDG&E's newest proposal asking that SDG&E be allowed to charge back to ratepayers its uninsured losses from three of the 2007 firestorms that CAL FIRE concluded were caused by SDG&E equipment. And if this is approved, again, it could raise rates $250 or so per household, the estimates are. If you care about it and you want to come speak out, Diane, can you tell us one more time when and where these hearings will be held that the public can participate in on Monday?
Yes, it's going to be at the California Center for the Arts, Escondido. It's going to be in Salon Room Number 1, and the address is 340 North Escondido Boulevard. This is Monday, this coming Monday, January 9th at 2, and then again at 7 p.m. And the assigned commissioner from the California Public Utilities Commission, there's only five of them, and the administrative law judge are having this public participation hearing in San Diego. We fought, the Mussy Grade Road Alliance fought for this hearing, so you can tell them why you don't want to pay SDG&E for its fires.
Well, very good. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes an artist reception, a family fun fest, train rides, a walk up Mount Helix, a lore of the Kumeyaay class, and an international music and arts festival.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions including theatrical performances, a writers' conference, a Hawaiian and Celtic guitarist and songwriter, outdoor ice skating, an author's book signing, and a Native American powwow at Cuyamaca College.
So stay tuned for all these events and many more.
The Wieghorst Museum in El Cajon invites you to an opening night artists' reception for a new exhibit titled Salmagundians and Their Friends, this Saturday, January 7th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. The exhibit features local plein air artists who paint subjects outdoors using natural lighting. The exhibit will run from January 9th through February 14th. For more information, visit wieghorstmuseum.org.
You can bring the whole family to a family fun fest at Croc Center on January 7th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Activities include arts and crafts, an inflatable fun park, sports challenges, giveaways, and more. Croc Center is located at 6845 University Avenue in San Diego, just one block west of La Mesa. For more information, you can visit sd.croccenter.org.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo reopens January 7th after its holiday season hiatus. In addition to viewing vintage railroad cars, you can ride the rails on a one-hour Golden State excursion departing at 11 a.m. or 2:30 p.m. each Saturday and Sunday in January. For details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
An international music, dance, and art festival sponsored by the San Diego Chinese Art and Cultural Society will be presented on Saturday, January 7th at 7 p.m. on the Poway Performing Arts Center. The festival will not only promote the awareness of Chinese art and culture, but also embrace and promote other cultures. Scholarships will also be awarded to winners of the Youth Art Competition. For tickets and details, visit PowayCenter.com.
You're invited to start the new year off on the right foot by joining the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association's Walk Up Mount Helix on Saturday, January 7th at 10 a.m. Walkers will gather at the fire station on Vivera and stroll up to the summit. At the amphitheater, enjoy live music by Jan McBride Jazz, tasty refreshments, and the beauty of this unique community. This event is open to everyone in the community to join old friends, meet new neighbors, and relish a beautiful morning in the park. Children and dogs are welcome to participate.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College invites you to participate in the Lore of the Kumeyaay, a class offered on Saturday, January 7th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Native Americans have inhabited San Diego County for at least 10,000 years. Come find out how they lived, their history, spirituality, and daily lifestyle with Jan Tubilio, a longtime student of Kumeyaay culture. Students will see tools and other items important to their lives and take a tour of the habitat garden. To enroll or learn more, you can visit thegarden.org.
Sunset Trivia will host trivia nights each Thursday in January from 6 to 8 p.m. at Wineworks in La Mesa. Their motto is Think, Drink, and Win, with wine-related prizes up for grabs. For details, visit LaMesaWineWorks.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Tony Award-winning Broadway icon Ben Vereen brings his show Steppin' Out Live with Ben Vereen to the Poway Center for the Performing Arts on January 12th at 7:30 p.m. The program is a unique blend of artistry, combining a tribute to Broadway, Frank Sinatra, and a very special tribute to Sammy Davis Jr. This show includes Vereen's three-piece ensemble and the Ben Vereen Youth Orchestra. For tickets and details, you can visit PowayCenter.com.
A showing of the classic film Casablanca will take place at the Alpine Library on Tuesday, January 17th at 12:30 p.m. and again at 5:30 p.m. You can watch the movie starring Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart on the big screen, followed by a film discussion as part of the Alpha Film Classic series.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present What the Butler Saw, a classic British farce, opening January 20th and running through February 19th. When a psychiatrist tries to seduce an aspiring secretary, his botched efforts lead to a comic bedlam, including his insatiable wife, a randy bellhop, a befuddled police officer, and Sir Winston Churchill. For tickets and details, you can visit LamplightersLaMesa.com.
Each year, over 300 aspiring writers from around the world attend the San Diego State University Writers Conference. This year, the conference will be held January 20th through the 22nd at the San Diego Marriott in Mission Valley. The conference was the first to pioneer one-on-one appointments for writers with editors, agents, and other top-tier publishing professionals who can provide direct feedback on your writing. This year's keynote speakers include R.L. Stine, one of the best-selling children's authors in history, J.A. Jantz, a top 10 New York Times best-selling author, Jonathan Mayberry, five-time winner of the Bram Stoker Award, and Sherilyn Kenyon, international and New York Times number one best-selling author of fantasy, horror, and more. For information on fees and registration for the 33rd Annual San Diego State University Writers Conference, visit neverstoplearning.net/writers.
You can meet author Roger Conley at the Alpine Library on Saturday, January 21st at 10 a.m. He has written seven fact-based historical novels, including several that have won awards. His latest is Deepwater, set in the early days of the Cold War and the red-baiting hysteria of the McCarthyism era.
Young Actors Theater will host cabaret nights on Friday and Saturday, January 27th and 28th at the Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley. The cabaret nights showcase talented Young Actors Theater's members performing musical dance, and acting performances to benefit the musical group. For tickets and details, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is open at Viejas, now until January 29th. Feel the cool Pacific Mountain air on your face while you bunny hop, camel spin, and swizzle your way around the Viejas ice rink. For details, you can visit viejas.com.
The Native American Student Alliance at Cuyamaca College will host its third annual powwow on Saturday, February 4th, from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. in front of the Communication Arts Complex Building B. The powwow aims to promote Native American heritage with activities including bird singing, a native singing style of the Kumeyaay people honoring the culture and traditions of the local tribes of this region. The powwow will also include arts and craft vendors, food vendors, drums, native dances, and more.
Acoustic guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jim Earp will perform Hawaiian and Celtic guitar music, as well as folk rock songs at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, February 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. Wine and cheese are available for the performance in the winery's cozy back room. For details or to get a full February schedule of events on this venue, you can visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
That's all for this week. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. On New Year's night, an El Cajon police officer shot a man who was wielding a knife on a public street. Officers responded to calls reporting a disturbance near 2nd Street and Oakdale Avenue shortly after 9 p.m., They reportedly found the suspect, a white man in his 60s, walking in the roadway armed with a knife. According to Lieutenant Randy Salard with ECPD's Special Enforcement Division, the suspect was noncompliant with the officers and attempts to take him into custody were unsuccessful. 10 News reports that officers twice fired tasers, attempting to use nonlethal weapons to subdue the suspect, who pulled the barbs out of his skin and then lunged at officers with a knife. The responding officer shot the suspect at 2nd Street and Madison Avenue. Paramedics responded immediately and began treating the suspect at the scene. He was transported to a local trauma center, and he is expected to survive, police told 10 News. The officer was wearing a body camera, and footage has been retained as evidence while the investigation continues. Names of the officer and suspect have not yet been released.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. The California Highway Patrol is asking for help to identify a hit-and-run driver who struck and killed a pedestrian at 1:30 a.m. New Year's morning on eastbound State Route 94, just east of Kenwood Drive in Spring Valley. There is no description of the hit-and-run vehicle. The man who was fatally struck down had been driving a gray Nissan Sentra, but pulled over into the center divide after arguing with a passenger. He got out of the vehicle and began running in the fast lane of traffic. He was struck by a vehicle that failed to stop, continuing east on Highway 94. The victim died at the scene due to his injuries. Failing to stop at the scene of an accident is a crime. If you have any information on the hit-and-run driver or vehicle, please call Officer Kevin Perlstein at 619-401-2000.
A man found in a burned home New Year's morning on Woodland Vista in Lakeside has died, and authorities say the fire was intentionally set. Deputies responded to the blaze around 8 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day and extinguished the fire that engulfed the living room and extended into the attic. The victim, who was the only human occupant in the home, was transported to UCSD Medical Center's burn unit, where he later died. Sergeant Greg Hampton with the Sheriff's Department says the fire appears intentional, but there are no outstanding suspects at this time. An investigation is continuing, and the victim's cause of death will be determined by an autopsy.
There were no other people in the home, but firefighters from the Lakeside Fire Department did rescue and revive a Labrador Retriever dog found inside the burned residence using a special pet oxygen mask. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The holiday season just got brighter at Tir Na N'Og, a horse rescue sanctuary in East County. In mid-November, as we reported, two golf carts used to feed rescued horses were stolen from the facility in Guate. But now, one of those golf carts has been found on a property nearly 5 miles away and returned, thanks to an anonymous tipster. A second stolen car was also spotted at the same time, but was missing when the authorities arrived, the Union Tribune reports. Fortunately, donations have helped Tir Na N'Og replace the second missing cart. In addition, two more carts have been donated to the sanctuary, just in time for new arrivals joining over 100 rescued animals already at the site. Founded in 2003, the facility takes in abused, abandoned, and rescued animals from County Animal Services. To learn more about Tir Na N'Og, or to donate and support the nonprofit's animal rescue work, you can visit horsesoftirnanog.org. This is John Fastier, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is Rebecca Williamson with the Weekend Weather Report. You may want to keep your umbrella handy. Heavy rainfall is the forecast starting Saturday and continuing until Monday, continuing a wet start to the new year. This storm is not expected to bring more snow to San Diego County mountains, but could help raise snow levels at ski destinations above 7,000 feet in Southern California. The last 3 months of 2016 proved wetter than normal across Southern California, particularly during December. San Diego's airport at Lindbergh Field received 1.79 inches more than normal from October to December, while the Ramona Airport in East County got nearly 2.9 inches above normal during the same period. There's more good news. On January 4th, the Sierra snowpack measured 70% of normal with new storms forecast, bringing welcome relief to drought-parched forest in Northern California.
Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
This is John Fastier with East County Magazine's Jobs Talk. As of January 1st, the minimum wage in California has gone up to $10.50 an hour for all businesses with more than 25 employees. Employers with fewer employees will have an extra year until 2018 to comply. In the city of San Diego, workers got an even bigger wage hike to a minimum of $11.50 an hour. The city's ordinance applies to all businesses, regardless of size. The ordinance does not affect other areas of the county outside the city limits. The raises put some extra holiday jingle in the pockets of minimum wage workers, but some employers face added economic challenges due to their rising costs. The Union Tribune reports that some major restaurants in San Diego are responding by adding a surcharge of about 3% onto dining customers' bills, rather than raise prices on meals or eliminate tipping, both unpopular options with restaurant patrons. Both the city and state minimum wages will continue to gradually rise up to a maximum of $15 an hour statewide by 2022.
This is Liz Alpin with a Chargers recap. In potentially their last game in San Diego, the Chargers squared off against the team they lost to in overtime in Week 1, the Kansas City Chiefs, on New Year's Day. Josh Lambeau kicked the field goal in the first quarter for the Chargers to take a 3-0 lead. Chiefs kicker Cairo Santos tied the game with a field goal of his own, and the score was 3-3. The Chargers reclaimed the lead in the second with Philip Rivers' pass to Antonio Gates, and the lead was 10-3. The Chiefs got that one back easily. After a big gain on the pass play to Albert Wilson, quarterback Alex Smith ran it in himself to tie the game at 10. Kansas City took their first lead with 6 minutes left with an easy little pass from Smith to Sir Kendrick West for the touchdown. Kansas City led 17-10. They added 3 more and went to the locker room up 20-10. In the second half, the Chargers struck back in a big way. An interception by Jaleel Adai returned for a 90-yard pitch six brought the Chargers back to within 3 at 20-17. Smith found West again, however, and the Chiefs scored back up by 10, 27-17. The Chargers thought that was bad enough, but Tyreek Hill made it worse with a 95-yard punt return for a touchdown and a 34-17 Kansas City lead. The Chargers added 3 more to make the score 34-20 in the fourth. A field goal gave Kansas City a 37-20 lead. The Chargers gave it one last hurrah with a touchdown pass from Rivers to Hunter Henry, but the Chiefs ultimately won what was potentially the Chargers' last game in San Diego 37-27. In other news, the Chargers have fired head coach Mike McCoy. Mike McCoy is a man of high character, and we thank him for his dedication to the Chargers, said Chargers President of Football Operations John Spanos. The decision to dismiss Mike was made in the best interest of our franchise. Our team's disappointing performance has not matched this team's potential and has fallen short of the demanding standards that we seek to impose throughout our organization. Our comprehensive search for a new head coach begins immediately. I wanted to thank Mike for his tireless work and commitment to this organization, said General Manager Tom Telesco. He instilled a culture of work ethic and togetherness that we can build on for years to come.
The Laguna Mountain Volunteers Association is looking for more members to help with activities on Mount Laguna. Their volunteers staff the Visitor Information Center, answer questions from visitors, and handle sales of adventure passes, books, maps, and forest-related items. Their Trail Mountainous crew keeps trails safe and enjoyable for hikers, mountain bikers, and travelers on horseback. Volunteers have also helped rebuild an observation deck destroyed by fire and other projects. The Laguna Mountain Volunteers also provide interpretive services in summertime, including campfire programs for children and adults at area campgrounds. A campfire program might include information on mountain history, including depictions of mountain men, Imperial Valley farmers, a Kumeyaay Native American, or the first ranger on the mountain. Other programs include wildlife crafts, such as making pine cone bird feeders. The volunteers also lead nature walks during the summer, providing information on the forest flora and fauna. You can even create your own program. Volunteers are needed year-round, from winter snows to summer's warmth atop the 6,000-foot high peak. For more information on how to join and become a volunteer, you can visit the Laguna Mountains Volunteers Association website at www.lmva.net or call Bob Perry at 619-442-6212. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, Please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.